This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Leroy Dragon!
This is Dirt and Sprague.
Dirt got fired. He's looking for a job. Don't hire him. He's just stay away from the guy. It's sports radio. 1080 The Fan, not with Dirt. Sorry, dude.
With Andy Dirt Johnson and Brendan Sprague.
What is a Sprague? We should just call him Craig. Yeah, that's your new name, Craig.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080.
I'm here to support a friend and a work colleague.
You don't know what love is.
Love you very much, Francie.
The Fan.
All right, welcome back in. Hour two, Dirt and Sprague with you here on Portland Sports Leader 1080 The Fan. We'll get to Aaron Rodgers. Ask the question, what the hell got into Oregon State? We're hauling. The joke God. Crawford told me.
Oh, God.
And then we'll get back into some college football
Not
stuff.
Not a joke.
At crunch time. But let's get to our NFL whip round.
Frozen Tundra.
You're supposed to say, how about
the
Cowboys?
Something.
Oh, I didn't know. I don't. This is my first time here.
Add something to the mix here.
Oh, it does.
The autumn wind is a Raider.
I already did the Raiders.
Oh.
Come on,
I thought that was a Lou Holtz impression. It's what it sounded like you were doing.
You don't do the, you don't ever heard the Berman?
Yeah, I have.
I just go real sloppy with it.
Yeah, I know.
Well, Crawford doesn't listen to the show. All right, let's start
I
here.
I just never listen at 1 o'clock on Mondays.
Let's start with last night's game between the winless Giants missing everyone and the Denver Broncos coming off a bye.
Lewis split right. Manning rolls the pocket to the right. He throws it right, completes it to Ingram, who dives in for the touchdown. Manning on a 3rd and 2. A 5-yard touchdown pass to Evan Ingram.
Now we're talking complimentary football. Defense rises. Offense in good field position, taking advantage of some good play calling.
There's the call on the Giants radio network. If you picked up Orleans Darquois in fantasy football, you deserve a trophy, a free meal, and to have won over the weekend. He rushed for 117 yards. And I don't know how the hell it happened, but the lowly Giants get their first win of the year, 23-10.
I'm sorry, man. This is my biggest surprise of the week, and I didn't see this coming in a million years. Eli Manning didn't do a ton. He was only 11 of 19 for 120 yards. Some running back nobody's ever heard of out of Tulane in his fourth year in the NFL. Goes for 120 yards against one of the better defenses in the league, and now Denver's wondering where the health of Trevor Siemian is. I think they just caught him napping off of the bye week, but you got to hope he's healthy moving forward.
Here's a nice little stat real quick. Denver Bronco fan seems to be the most emotional when we talk about him here on the radio show. So I just want you to bear this in mind for the crowd that's 100% sold on Siemian. The Broncos are 1-6 all time when Siemian throws 40 or more passes. They're 0-2 this year when he's attempted at least 40 passes.
Well, that's not how they win football
games.
He's
not that guy. No,
I mean, they were down early. They're down 17-0. They had to throw their way out of it. It's not a recipe for success for them.
All right, let's go to Kansas City, where Vegas had a hunch about the last undefeated team going down this weekend, and it turns out that they were right.
3rd and 2. Oh, and it's caught. No, White Brown inside the 20. And he's in for the touchdown off the ricochet.
I thought Romo had gotten better with Nance of stopping to talk over him. He couldn't control it there.
That was
no
a crazy
way.
Play. Yeah, that was a crazy play.
Nance and Romo. Le'Veon Bell had his best game of the year, rushing for 179 yards and a touchdown. Him and Antonio Brown combined for 346 of the Steelers' total 439 yards of offense. They knock off the Chiefs in Arrowhead, Pittsburgh. Has won 5 straight over Kansas City.
They got their number. I think all the people knocked out in survivor pools who took Pittsburgh over Jacksonville last week are ticked, saying, well, thanks for showing up this week, Pittsburgh. This is the Steelers we've been waiting to see. Stout on the defensive side. Roethlisberger doing enough. and then riding one of the best running backs in the league in Le'Veon Bell. That's what we've been wanting to see out of them. They finally showed up, and, you know, not a huge shock on this. We looked at the spread last week, and we said, why is it only three? Something's going on here. Pittsburgh's had their number in the past. Even Kevin Todd said he liked them outright on the money line. I think the two things that blew me away the most, one was their ability to run the football against a good Kansas City defense with Le'Veon Bell going for $179, and then shutting down Kareem Hunt. Alex Smith was fine in this game, a typical performance, 246 yards, a touchdown, no picks. They held Kareem Hunt to 21 yards on 9 carries. That's the reason they won the game.
Andy Reid, clock management. I've been preaching it for years, man. And he decides to go for it on 4th down instead of kicking the field goal with 7 minutes to go because he feels rushed that he has to get a touchdown instead of a field goal. All right, let's go to Hotlanta where the Falcons cannot stop blowing leads.
47 seconds to go. From the 26, Ryan over the middle. Intercepted. Picked off by Rashad Jones.
Yeah, Greg Gumbel there of CBS. The Falcons are up 17 points on a Dolphins team that had combined scored 22 points their previous 3 weeks. And that didn't matter, though. The Fins defense stymies Matt Ryan and the Falcons offense in the second half, and they get the road win 20-17.
That's such a great stat. I was watching the first half of this game. I was just chuckling because it's been fun to watch Jay Cutler suck and just have him, you know, those faces on the sidelines, the typical Jay Cutler being down in the dumps. I didn't see this coming. Outscoring them 20-0 in the second half. You said it, just teasing it. I mean, the Falcons cannot stop blowing leads. This is a game you have to win, especially for a team coming off of a bye week. They lost their last game to Buffalo at home. They're at home again. Now you look at the schedule moving forward. They got to go to New England on a Sunday night next week. Good luck with that. To the Jets. The Jets aren't an easy gimme anymore the way they've been playing. The Panthers, the Cowboys, and they're in Seattle. They're home against Tampa, home against Minnesota. The schedule's brutal. These are games that they should be winning, and they're finding ways to blow the lead.
How about a high-scoring affair in the Big Easy?
Somebody who would like to score quickly and get something going because they have not had much going so far today. The quick pass picked off. That's not what they were looking for. Marshawn Lattimore. Touchdown.
Saints-Lions on Fox. 5 defensive touchdowns were scored in the Lions-Saints game. Matt Stafford had a tough day. And the Lions almost came back. They were down 35, cut it to 14, and then cut it to 7 before throwing the pick 6 in the end zone. You'd have looked at this score and thought Drew Brees was going to win you your fantasy week. And nope, he was god-awful. 3 interceptions returned for a touchdown. Only 1 touchdown thrown, and the Saints win 52-38.
Yeah, both quarterbacks really struggled in this game. 5 picks combined for the two of them. You mentioned all the defensive touchdowns. How about the Saints getting rid of Adrian Peterson? You have Ingram go for 114. Alvin Kamara went for 75 yards on the ground. They rushed it for almost 200 yards. That's not what you expect out of a Saints offense, especially against a defense I think we all respected in Detroit. And this to me was, I mean, we opened the show talking about, can you figure things out? Do you know who teams are? This game was the epitome of that this weekend. Who are the Lions? Who are the Saints? I think there's still so many questions, and I was just left with more questions than answers after watching this one.
All right, and finally, a strange way for the Patriots to secure their win in the Meadowlands against the Jets.
McGuire in the backfield. McCown locates his tight end. Safarian Jenkins battling for the pylon. He's in. Touchdown, Jets.
Sorry, Ian Eagle. He's not in. A rule I didn't even know that was a rule occurred to Austin Safarian Jenkins as his would-be touchdown turned into not only not being a touchdown, but a fumble/touchback and gave the Patriots the ball, and the Jets could never recover from there. The Pats, whose defense was awful yet again, survive and get a big divisional win over New York.
Yeah, I think the bigger surprise out of that was Patriots only scoring 24 points in this game. They had a little extended break. They played, remember, on a Thursday night against Tampa the week before, so you expected them to be fresh. You had Gronkowski going. He had 2 touchdown catches. Cooks had a good game, but only scoring 24 points against the Jets defense. Didn't see that coming, and I still maintain that's one of the worst calls I've seen. You can cite whatever bylaw on a rule book you want. That was a touchdown, and any rule that takes away that touchdown is an absolute joke.
And finally, this is kind of just a cool note. No audio here. Teddy Bridgewater officially cleared to return to practice, and many around the Vikings believe we will see Bridgewater back this season. Still maybe a max of 3 more weeks before he actually has a chance to return, but good for Teddy B.
Man,
getting back on the field.
One of the most horrific injuries we've ever seen. What happened to him at practice, the non-contact going down, that's awesome to see that he's back. And It makes you wonder what Minnesota does at quarterback. I mean, they still can't figure
Case
it out.
Case Keenum hasn't been terrible.
Case Keenum has not been terrible. No, I mean, you're right. I mean, look, they benefited from Rodgers going down in the first quarter. That was a game. It was still 14-10 at the half, and they were going against Brett Hundley, who threw three interceptions in that game. They only won by 13. But Keenum hasn't been dynamic. He's had his struggles. He struggled on the road against Chicago. Bradford's still banged up. Just watching how that plays out will be interesting.
Yeah, we'll talk about Oregon State. But first, let's talk about this. Coming up next, the worst possible thing that could have happened to Green Bay did as Aaron Rodgers goes down with a broken collarbone. Should Green Bay trust Brett Hundley? We'll discuss that next on The Fan. It's going to bounce after this segment. Mike Lynch takes over because we're going to talk some Oregon State football. He was down there as they were honoring the Giant Killers.
Can I get a bottle of that booze?
It's really expensive. No, you can't. He didn't even get a bottle.
Can't even hook me up.
How about I answer the question here?
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
I can sell you one, but I don't have just like a liquor.
A surplus
of liquor.
I got to say, that was one of the cooler parts of the Civil War last year, outside of Oregon losing, was Crawford walking around with a bunch of those 22s at our tailgate.
The Giant Killer stuff, just, yeah.
Yeah.
He had boxes and boxes of 22s.
I think we have more of those that I've got.
Who wants a 22? Who wants a 22? You get a 22.
How much would you give me the bourbon for if I wanted to buy one?
The bourbon is, that's an expensive bourbon. That's a $50 bottle.
Yeah, it looks, no, it's supposed to be really good bourbon.
Yeah, it is.
I wouldn't open it, too. I'd let it age for years.
You'd have to wait 50 years.
I got two for myself.
Or the next time they upset a top five team, you drink it.
Or number one team.
That seems very mean to say 50 years.
Well, because this is the 50-year anniversary.
Yeah, that's what he's saying.
Yeah, that's not they're not going to be good for 50 years.
I'll get you guys some Gilgamesh Giant Killers 22s, though.
Well, you know, and two, let's give you some shout-out here. Oregon State took care of you this weekend, and I was glad to hear that because, frankly, this Giant Killer wave they're riding the last year and a half, 2 years, really didn't happen without Alex Crawford. The reality is,
it does not.
They probably honor the team, but they don't have any highlights. They don't put any of this crap on merch. They don't take full advantage of what's been going on with that label unless Alex Crawford comes around and puts his ass into making a documentary about it. So,
well done, Crawford.
Kudos to you, man. You started a wave at Oregon State.
No, it was great. It was the school did a really good job with the 50th anniversary celebration this weekend. I know sometimes we can be critical of the Oregon State athletic department, maybe for ways they've run things or done things.
They mean like not showing people where the alumni tailgate is at a USC football game?
No comment. All I know is I'm gonna say they nailed this weekend. It was really impressive.
Yeah, it seemed like a good atmosphere. People energized to be there and.
People were like the crowd was small, but it was like loyal and energetic.
See, on TV, I expected it to be small. On TV, it didn't look like it was as bad as I thought it would be.
It's just hard because perception has been skewed by how crappy the season is, and the crowds have just all been small at Research Stadium. So,
screw it. We might as well talk about it. We're already into the segment.
Yeah, we could talk. That was fun to watch, man.
That was an entirely different team.
Like, I don't know where the hell that came from.
Somebody tweeted me, and you know, I put it out. And I responded to it. And the more I thought about it over the weekend, the more I kind of buy into it. I'm a big conspiracy theory guy. Some of them are stupid, but this one I can't help but think about, is it true? Sabotage. I have no other explanation for why we saw that Oregon State team when we haven't seen them all year long.
Well, hold on. Okay,
explain the play calling.
Hold on.
The play calling.
Hold on.
We know he hated his staff.
I know. We do know that.
We saw that, didn't we?
Okay. Let me say this. Before we go buy into your sabotage theory.
Before we go aliens living on the moon.
Yes. Can we see this for a couple of more weeks first?
Oh, yeah, I'm with you.
Because
there.
this is and I thought you highlighted it perfectly on Twitter in a conversation with Casey Holdall this weekend. This was their Caleb Canales game.
Yes.
The team had quit. They were playing awful. Nate McMillan gets fired. They go on the road and they beat the Bulls. And we're all wondering, wait, what the hell? Where was that? They got a new coach. They played fired up for whatever reason. They found their way into a win. And then what happened the rest of the year? They went back to being the awful team that they were. They had that brief moment in the sun.
They play Stanford next.
And then it faded. So before we buy into they were tanking the offense on purpose to fire Gary Anderson or get him out of there, let's see this for a couple of weeks. Hey, if they play great offensively for like the next month, I'm with you, Sprager. I'd be wondering where the hell was that the first 5 weeks of the season, but I'm not going to overreact to one performance.
Well, here's the other thing, too, because I'm totally with you, dude. I'm not saying that that's going to be who they are every game going forward. They get Stanford next, and right now I'd bet Stanford's going to roll them. See, somebody texts, is that a triple option that Georgia Tech is running against Miami? Looks really good. Too bad it wouldn't work for Oregon State, huh? This is my whole point on going back to you have to be
unique,
some niche, unique program. They did look good running what they ran Saturday, albeit against not a very good Colorado.
Biden.
No, but I'm saying you can get those athletes to run that offense. You don't have to be a triple option program. I'm sorry. I don't buy that. You can be a triple option team if you want.
Well, yeah.
But to stand out or to be better in a bowl team, you don't have to be that.
People are arguing the only way they're going to win is by hiring a triple option coach. That's ridiculous. I would be excited to see it. It would be unique. I think it would be cool.
That's what I'm like, oh, that would be cool if you got the right triple option coach and you establish it, or you don't have to. Like, that's not the...
Yeah, it's not the only option that Oregon State has to remain as a program.
Well,
yeah.
But here's the other kicker about that game, and, you know, somebody texting Colorado sucks is a big part of it. Absolutely it was. But those were different sets. Their substitution patterns were different. The play calling was different. That was not a team that I've seen all season long.
Agreed. A big part of it was Colorado coming in flat, thinking they're playing a team whose coach just quit, and Oregon State is the worst team in the conference.
But didn't it look like a different playbook?
But it looked like a different playbook. I agree with you. And I don't know why.
Even Gerritsen was slinging around a little bit.
Why you wait to open the bag until this point in the season? I mean, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, the most palpable thing for me was the energy. I feel like OSU just kind of seemed morose like the rest of the season. They just kind of seemed like...
Yeah.
Golly. Give you a big word drop thank you. Ding there.
Yeah, they just seemed kind of dead. Like, there was... The only passionate guy you'd seen all season was Seth Collins, and this team just kind of felt like, eh. And then on Saturday, there was a lot of energy. I mean, we saw the video that OSU tweeted out of Coach Hall.
In the locker room after.
In the locker room. Yeah. I went to practice on Friday, and the guys seemed pumped. The guys just seemed... There's just a little extra, to use Willie Taggart's word, juice in the team this week.
Did you see... And I also buy this. This isn't a... Yeah, this is probably a theory I kind of sell a little bit. Remember when he quit and all we saw was positive reaction from players on him? This doesn't have to mean that he doesn't have great relationships. I'm wondering how much of that was put out or put on by the coaching staff to make it look like a united front where they, hey, guys, let's not let this break us. Let's stay together. Let's thank Gary Anderson for bringing us here. And then they go out and they tweet. Did you see what Manasseh Hungalu said after the game?
I did not.
He was asked if he thought about Gary Anderson at all during that game. And he goes, no, not one part. Not ever again.
Good.
And it felt like the real honest answer that we had gotten, where a player looked at it and goes, dude, screw that guy.
Yeah.
Like, he chose to leave. He didn't want to be here. We had to go out. We still had to go play a football game. I'm not thinking about him.
Yeah, I know. And that should be the response. I get, and, you know, one of our P1s, Gus, is bringing up the point of using all the running backs. That, to me, was the fun part. Like,
we've
been
saying that for weeks, Dirt.
Like, somebody made fun of us early in the year for saying they should find ways to get the football into their running backs' hands and saying we don't know X's and O's and we're not coaches. How dare you coach from the radio booth? But, I mean, they have talent at that position. We've known that all year. Nall's good. Tyner, when healthy, can be an effective player. I love watching our Pierce run, and Johnson has been kind of a question mark of how do you get him involved. All four of them had carries. They threw the ball to Pierce. Ryan Nall had a couple of catches. Thomas Tyner had a catch. They had athletes, and I remember I went back to a preseason thing that Willie Taggart said of, you know, everybody was questioning the wide receiver position for the Ducks, and he said, look, I got all these skilled guys that can play running back, and I can throw them in the slot. I don't care where they're going to line up. I just want to get them the football. Taj Griffin, backfield, slot, outs, I don't care. I just want to get him the football. And it was fun to see Oregon State do that for a week of saying, you know what? We got Nall, we got Pierce, we got Tyner, we got Johnson. Let's get the ball in their hands as often as we possibly can.
Well, the very first play was a run to Tyner, and he came from the slot position. They had three running backs on the field. They were like,
whoa, what's going on? This is cool. We're using all of our skill players.
That's how I felt, too. It's just like, okay, what are your best players? They're all pretty much playing running back. What are we going to do? And then I try not to be the fan that's coaching from the radio booth.
I don't do that often, but it's fair to point it out that the running backs need to be on the field together. That's a fairly obvious thing.
Your offense is totally anemic and just not doing anything. You're like, maybe we should try this out. And then they did, and it was fun. Even though the Beavs lost, it was the most fun and the most competitive Beav game we've seen this year.
Well, and I thought, I mean, you tweet, because you were down there, Crawford, and you tweeted it, and I could sense it on TV, and I was glad to see you say it. It felt like a different emotion on the sideline.
It did, man.
A team rallying together, you know, whatever the cause was. I hope that's something that they can duplicate, and it's something that carries over. They got a bye week, I think, this week, and then they get Stanford next week. So, look, it's going to be a tougher test, no doubt, but... Just play, because you used a good word, and just playing with some passion and playing with some energy and fighting. they're not going to win a lot of games. This team maybe is going to end with one. Maybe they get another one and get to two wins. But at least bringing the energy and the passion is something that you can control.
Yes, no doubt about it. Corey Hall had this team ready to play. They were there, but a minute 40 was not enough time. I didn't like the only thing I didn't like was the play calling on the last drive.
No, did not like that.
No run attempts whatsoever. You had three full timeouts. The clock stops on first downs. But again, your season's already done. You're not a good program. It was just fun to watch them go out there, show some emotion, have some fight, be in a ball game, even though Colorado's not good. And I would just temper the emotions of fans who were fired up from seeing one video of Corey Hall about him being the new interim.
We're Hall in, baby.
Yeah. Hall and Oates.
Let's just pause it a little bit. Let's see how the rest of the season plays out.
Ed Orgeron got a job as an interim guy.
He did.
Clay Helton got a job as an interim guy.
No, I know that. But
Mark Helfrich got a job as the next interim guy.
Stop it.
Could happen.
Stop it.
I will say one other thing for Beaver fans.
Stop it. And he was never an interim coach.
He was an interim.
Helfrich was not an interim coach.
I would classify those 4 years as interim. Tomato.
Yeah, Chip left after the bowl game.
A lot of people didn't buy into that process, but, you know, whatever.
No, one other thing I wanted to say is I had the opportunity to chat a little bit with Scott Barnes, the athletic director. I hadn't met him before, and far and away was genuinely really impressed. And I, as a Beaver fan, I'm very confident whatever he's going to do going forward.
Yeah, like leave to Nebraska at some point.
The optimism.
Like Bill Moose.
Optimism is back, baby.
And no, I'm with you. All jokes aside, I'm with you.
The athletic director hasn't necessarily been dynamic at Oregon State recently.
Turtle. All right, good stuff, Crawford. You talking got us way over the clock, but it was fun. We had to talk some bees with you.
See you later.
Thanks for filling in. The worst possible thing for Green Bay was Aaron Rodgers' injury. What the hell do they do? Do they just trust Brett Hundley? We'll talk about that next, but here is Crawford with the sports update.
This is Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
135 on The Fan, and I just realized something. Sorry.
Hey, it is 135. How about that?
You ever get stuck in those habits?
Oh, I do it all the time. Especially after you do a solo show the next day, you come back. Like, yes. Wait, I don't need to tease for this segment anymore. That's kind of nice.
I'm not used to this.
How about that? We do have some breaking news in the NBA.
Yes, we do.
I want to pass along.
Let me get it for you here. If this mouse would work.
The NBA season tips off tomorrow. And remember a couple of months ago, the Spurs were exploring trade options for LaMarcus Aldridge?
Yeah, I do remember when they were exploring.
Wanted to get rid of him. This guy sucks. Get him out of here. He chokes in the playoffs. Well, that changed. They just signed him to a 3-year, $72 million extension. He's going to be the Spur through 2021.
So from the guy that they didn't want.
So this guy sucks. We don't like him. Get him out of here. Let's keep him here for 4 more years.
Let's pay him $72 million more.
Makes sense, right? Makes sense. So.
Yeah, I mean, like, good for him. Maybe they couldn't find a trade partner. It wasn't even remotely close. And they thought, well, we're not dealing him. Might as well keep him. It's not bad value for what he gives you. I know a lot of people are saying he's fallen off the side of a mountain, but statistically, he still gives you decent averages. Some have noted that he looked better in camp thus far. We'll see how that plays out when the season starts tomorrow, but good for L.A.
Yeah, there you go. He signs a big extension in San Antonio. The NBA season, that does tip off tomorrow. Hey, the big news in the NFL over the weekend was Aaron Rodgers, who, if you watched early on the road in Minnesota, he went down, was tackled after throwing the ball, landed on his right throwing shoulder, and that's it. He has suffered a broken collarbone in his throwing shoulder, and the Green Bay Packers Twitter account suggested that Rodgers could miss the remaining part of the season unless maybe they find a way into the playoffs without him. And it's amazing how much an injury can change the narrative completely, because this was a team, I think, at least I had the opinion, I think a lot of people agreed with me, probably the best in the NFC with the way he was playing, the way he was finding ways to win games, that comeback over the Packers last week, over the Cowboys last week. And then this happens, Brett Hundley comes in, he throws 3 picks, they lose by 13 to Minnesota with Case Keenum. And there's a serious question of, can Green Bay survive without him? And then what do you do? Do you trust Brett Hundley to move forward, or do you try and find another solution at the quarterback position?
Well, I would think you'd want to open it up a little bit. I know it seems ridiculous to some, but I do buy the Colin Kaepernick exploring factor. What does it hurt to bring him in for a meeting? What does it hurt to bring him in on a end of the year deal that costs you almost nothing and have him being a backup? You can say, well, the boycott and the protests and, all right, great. Are Packer fans not going to games anymore? Yeah, didn't think so. So I just don't think that this applies to this organization. But, you know, the whole Brett Hundley thing, how much can you really trust it?
You can't. I mean, he's played well in the preseason.
He was terrible against Minnesota.
His first pass attempt was an interception. He threw three picks. They also were in that game.
He doesn't put any fear in you throwing the ball down the field.
No, but then again, I don't know. There's two things about this. One, is there even a solution out there? Like, we can say, do you trust him? Or should he go somewhere else? I mean, what's your solution? People are floating Tony Romo out there. You get to try and take him out of the booth. Even there, Tony Romo has played one meaningful football. He's played a half of a meaningful game in the last year. That's it. That's all Tony Romo's played. So where else are you going to go? Are other quarterbacks going to get traded? I'm not necessarily buying that. I think they're stuck between a rock and a hard place. And this is a football team. You got to remember all the injuries that they had mounted up before this, which is just, it's a brutal stream for Packer fans. Their offensive line is dinged up. They finally got a couple of guys back this week. But I don't know if they're good enough to survive without Aaron Rodgers. He is that team.
I don't think they're making it.
So let's say you bring in Romo. It happens. It's not a team that's going to make much noise in the NFC. I'm not buying. I'm going to say you go out and trade for Eli Manning or Phillip Rivers or Drew, throw out any quarterback you want. Is that going to be enough to carry him over the top? I don't think they're good enough elsewhere on the roster to make up for the loss for Rodgers.
No, I don't think Romo's the answer. I know Aikman threw that out in the middle of the game. He was calling. I don't think Romo coming in is going to solve anything. And again, you know, what is your answer? There probably isn't an answer. But Dirt, again, this is my whole point. You have to give yourself the best option to win games, right? Their backup is Joe Callahan. I don't know anything about Joe Callahan. I know he was on the practice squad.
Does he sell Callahan auto parts?
Yeah, I think he does, but out in Sandusky, Ohio, but not anymore. He wants to be a quarterback. If Brett Hundley goes out and has the same performance that he just did against Minnesota, because they get the Saints this weekend in Green Bay, and I think right now the Saints might be feeling pretty confident about themselves.
They should.
If you go have that kind of performance again, it begs the question. Colin Kaepernick is a decent one to just wonder about. Again, I don't know if he leads you to the playoffs. He's better than Brett Hundley.
Yeah, well, it'd be interesting timing considering he's filing or arguing collusion against the NFL right now, and that was filed. But
just what are the other options? If it's not Kaepernick, then what other quarterback is out there? There isn't one. And how much is Brett Hundley going to do for you to go to the playoffs?
Oh, he's not. I mean, he's not. I'm looking at Green Bay now. I don't think they have a chance in hell to make it. They're 4-2. You mentioned they get the Saints. I think Detroit is now better than them. That's their next game. Maybe you can win games like Cleveland or Chicago later in the year, but
I don't know about Chicago anymore. That would be at Chicago.
You still got to go to Pittsburgh. You got to play a good Baltimore defense. You got to play the Buccaneers. You got to play Carolina. You got to play Minnesota again. I mean, it's not an easy slate. You got to play Detroit twice, so I still think we're trying to figure out who they are. Now, Minnesota has taken a hold of that division at 4-2. They have the head-to-head win, and it looks like it's theirs. And it's just, this is a brutal blow for a team that has gotten close the last couple of years, obviously, come up just short. And then we knew the injuries were mounting early in the year, and you just felt like, I was of the opinion, as long as they could get healthy when they needed to, I didn't know if anybody was going to be able to beat them. It was just get everybody healthy by the end of the year, go into the playoffs feeling somewhat confident. And with Aaron Rodgers, I wasn't going to pick anybody to beat him. And now this completely changes everything. And I don't think they can make the playoffs without him.
I think they beat Minnesota yesterday with Aaron Rodgers. And I think because of how special and talented he is, you're 100% right. It just, who's beating Aaron Rodgers? Who are you betting on to beat Green Bay? But who are you going to actually pick to beat Aaron Rodgers and the Packers?
You know what they should do is go get Brett Favre.
Did you see the petition going around?
There's a guy that started a petition, yeah.
He started a petition to bring Favre back, promising that if he comes back, they'll stop making fun of his penis size.
Yeah, because of the pictures that circulate on the internet about Brett Favre. And, they come back, play a couple of games. That would be damn entertaining, wouldn't it? See what he's got in the tank.
I don't know if it'd be entertaining anymore.
You would watch Brett Favre returning to the Packers.
Yeah, I'd watch the first game and then watch him be murdered after he takes a hit and realizes he's been out of football for 8 years.
He's got that copper fit sleeve.
What was his last year, 2009?
Oh, he was around later than that, wasn't he?
I don't know, man.
Okay, hold on, Googling.
2010, 11? It could have been.
Brett Favre played until 2010. Was his last 2010. Year.
That's
in Minnesota.
I mean, you're closer to 8 years at this point.
He was 5-8. He threw 11 touchdowns and 19 interceptions.
Is he 50 years old?
I think the year before that was the year. Yeah, the 2009 year was the year they blew the NFC title game with the pick in New Orleans.
So 2010 doesn't count because he missed like most of that year with an injury.
Well, he's 5-8. He played in 13 games.
Oh.
He hung around a little bit.
Maybe it's just the last three games I'm remembering then.
He hung around a little bit, but...
They shouldn't get Brett Favre.
Yeah, no, you're probably right.
What would push Packer fan to want Kaepernick?
You know, it's interesting that you brought that up because we already had a Packer fan chime in and say that he hopes that they tank the rest of the season. Is that it's a lost cause without Rodgers. The offensive line's banged up.
Rodgers might still be able to come back at the end of the year.
I know. And that's happened before. The last time he broke his collarbone, correct me if I'm wrong, I believe it was 2013. It was like the same injury, and they got him back for the playoffs.
But it was his non-throwing side.
Yeah, it might. Yeah,
this is on the throwing shoulder.
And they lost that, speaking of Kaepernick, they lost the 49ers in that game, 23-20. So they ended up making the wild card game. Remember, that was the year he came back for the final week of the season. So he got hurt in week eight. He got hurt. He missed weeks 9 through 16, and then he came back in week 17. Remember, they had that improbable touchdown pass at the end to Randall Cobb to beat the Bears and win the division in his first game back, and then they went to the playoffs and they lost the 49ers 23-20.
Yeah, Jesse G just saying, I was hoping you guys could talk me off the ledge. Now, I can't do that for you. I just don't know what's reasonable for the Green Bay Packers moving forward, but if there's a shot that Aaron Rodgers comes back for the postseason, I think you do whatever you can to try to maintain this year and sneak in even as a wild card. Because if Rodgers comes back from an injury like that and he can play in the playoffs, you have just as good odds to go to the Super Bowl the way this year's playing out.
Well, if you want something to be optimistic about, if you're a Packer fan, the last time they did it, you know who filled in for him? They had three different guys play for him when he missed games. Seneca Wallace, Scott Tolzien, and Matt Flynn.
I got a stat that'll blow your mind.
Oh.
Since 1992, only 9 games have been played by a quarterback not named Favre Rodgers for Green Bay.
Wow.
1992, only 9
There's three of
games.
Them right there. There's three of them in one season right there with Seneca Wallace, Scott Tolzien, and Matt Flynn. So Green Bay's looking for answers. Aaron Rodgers could be done for the year. Time will tell. We'll find out hopefully soon. But the Packers themselves announced that he could be done for the rest of the year. Broken collarbone in his throwing shoulder. They lose to Minnesota. And now we're all wondering, where do the Packers go from here? We'll see if Brett Hundley can get the job done. Hey, let's get back into some college football stuff. We'll talk some baseball in the final hour of the show. But what in the world happened in college football this weekend? And do you think you know the 4 best teams in the country? 55305. Crunch Time is next on 1080 The Fan.
Ever pay more for a gym membership?
Hey, Crunch Time, brought to you by Crunch Fitness. Always $9.95 a month, so why would you ever pay more for a gym membership? I'll be out at the Glorious House of Gains today after the show. Get my swole on. Talk some baseball in the final hour. We'll see how Mike feels about his Yanks being an 0-2 hole. Dodgers and Cubs, been a great series so far. My hate watch was at an all-time high in the ninth inning last night.
Oh, man, I was fired up.
John Lackey versus the Dodgers. It was just conflicting emotions all over the place.
You can't win in that situation.
I cannot win. I hate both equally. And we'll talk some Bill Moose going to Nebraska, get back into the Pac-12, Oregon, all that coming up in the final hour. By the way, Mariota going to play tonight, it sounds like, on Monday Night Football. There is some breaking news out of the NFL, though, and on the topic we were just talking about, and it has been officially announced that Aaron Rodgers needs surgery on his broken collarbone, and bye-bye season.
Yeah, surgery meant basically end of the year. If he didn't do surgery, they thought there was a shot he could come back for maybe the last week, if not the start of the postseason, assuming they're there.
That's all she wrote. So see you later, Aaron Rodgers, done for the year, and we'll see if the Packers can survive. Hey, I got a question. What in the world happened in college football this weekend?
Chaos, madness, indescribable moments like Clemson losing
what
to Syracuse.
What happened?
Or Auburn blowing, what was that, a 17, 20-point lead?
I believe they were up 20-0. Correct me if I'm wrong.
LSU.
I will say this. I'll throw this out there before we get into it. Saturday afternoon games were great. The LSU-Auburn game was that was a great game that came down to the wire.
It took a minute for it to become
great,
though.
It was ugly early. You had Miami-Georgia Tech was an awesome game.
That was a good
down, and then they get the field goal. Oklahoma-Texas was a great game.
Mm-hmm.
I know all those happened before this one, but USC-Utah was awesome. Michigan-Indiana went to overtime, had me compelled.
I didn't watch much of the Michigan game.
It was a good day of football.
I don't know what it is about Michigan this year. I don't find them very watchable.
They're very boring offensively.
Yeah.
Is their problem. So we went into the college football weekend saying, hey, no ranked teams are playing each other, so maybe see you next week. And not so fast, my friend. Friday night, Friday the 13th, of course, weird things are going to happen. Number 2 goes down. Clemson loses. Washington State loses. The number 8 team in the country. Then you fast forward to Saturday, as we mentioned. Washington, of course, number 5 went down. And then Auburn, the number 10 team in the country, went down. 4 teams in the top 10 all found a way to lose this weekend. And it toss and turned the polls. If you're wondering where teams shake up right now in the AP top 25, not that it means anything, Alabama's number one, Penn State's number two, Georgia's number three, TCU number four, and Wisconsin is number five. And this was one of those weekends that just, it changes the entire landscape of the conversation, because you start to look at other teams that maybe you didn't going in, where it felt like Clemson and Washington would for sure be there. And now you're looking at teams like TCU, Wisconsin, Miami, who are all within striking distance of the college football playoff.
Well, and some of those teams, you know, they take Miami, and I'm a big Mark Richt guy. I think he's a really good football coach. Credit to them. They've been in close games almost every single game they've played in, and they have found ways to kind of to get out and survive with a W, point being the fourth play catch that that kid had to set up the field goal to kick with 4 seconds to go. I don't trust him, though. I do think you can take some of these one-loss teams and you can put them up and say, are they as good as the undefeated? You know, Wisconsin's getting a lot of respect and credit, and that's been a consistently really good program. They've played nobody.
They have not played a team with a winning record.
And
or
somehow,
not beaten, excuse me. Well, they haven't lost, but they haven't beaten a team with a winning record.
Even take Washington, right? Washington loses to Arizona State. Not a lot of people see it coming. They're getting just eviscerated nationally from all the pundits who don't think that they've played anybody respectable on their schedule. Who the hell has Wisconsin played?
And by any, Nebraska's their best win.
But because they're Wisconsin, because we've seen them in Rose Bowls, because they play in the Big Ten, they tend to get a pass. I think it's been an interesting college football season. Credit to Syracuse, even though that they lost their quarterback at Clemson, to still be able to pull that one out. I know, Mike, you had to have been elated to watch Dino Babers pull that out. Now you just worry that he potentially is going to get taken by a better program. But college football was a lot of fun this weekend, and it was one that I don't know how many people thought it would be because there had no top 25 matchups.
There weren't any. And
no.
We had that weekend.
Even the Red River rivalry.
Awesome.
I mean, Oklahoma was a program that many thought would be blowing Texas out back and forth. Yeah. Had to come back late.
Why would you say that, Sprague? I love Dino Babers.
I know.
I don't want him to go.
Because I think Syracuse and Oregon State have a lot of common, and I've been here before, Mike. I know what it's like.
Good coach moves on to another program.
I do say that a lot when I first moved here, is that Syracuse and Oregon State are very similar programs.
You guys are just way better at basketball, and I'm jealous of that.
You have that. Well, you have baseball.
Yeah.
So you got your other sports.
Does Cuse have a baseball team?
No.
Okay. So basketball.
I don't know if you can really count it if Syracuse doesn't even have a baseball team.
Yeah,
that's true.
Plus, basketball makes buco bucks for Syracuse, whereas baseball.
That's true.
Not so much.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up the Oklahoma-Texas game. I do want to throw one statement out on that. I watched a lot of that game on Saturday. Sam Ellinger, the Texas quarterback.
The freshman kid, yeah.
I'm going to maintain he is one of the more enjoyable quarterbacks to watch in college football.
Because he sucks, but he's good?
Yes.
Yeah.
He's like a good, bad quarterback.
He'll throw a pick and you go, what are you seeing?
But he's all over the field. His jersey's a mess. Like, he's getting beat up. He's making plays with his legs. Like, he is damn entertaining to watch. And he keeps him in games. Like, the way he played against USC and the way he played against Oklahoma, it was just fun. It was fun to watch. But, I mean, you mentioned Wisconsin, Miami, some of these other teams. Like, can you trust him? That's one of our poll questions today at Dirt and Sprague on Twitter. We ask, which one of these teams in college football do you trust the most? Miami, USC, Wisconsin, or Michigan, of the undefeated or one-loss category. The overwhelming favorite in that response, Wisconsin got 53% of the vote.
I can't trust
53.
It.
They haven't beaten a team with a winning record. 53% say they can trust Wisconsin. More than they can trust USC.
Well, here's the beauty for Wisconsin. I don't think they'd play anybody in the Big Ten until the title game. I don't know their schedule top of my head, but I believe that is the
They
narrative.
Play Michigan.
Okay, so they get Michigan.
So they got their upcoming schedule. Get this gauntlet for Wisconsin. Maryland, at Illinois, at Indiana, home against Iowa, home against Michigan, at Minnesota. That's the rest of their schedule.
Boy, that's shaping up
their
to be a
tough
one.
Their best win of the season so far was 38-17 at Nebraska last week, at BYU, if you want to call that a good win. They have not beaten somebody with a winning record. I would still say USC is the team I trust the most. I know I have been on the opposite end of that argument.
I do not trust USC at all.
With a lot of people all season long. But if you throw them in that conversation, I don't trust Wisconsin because I haven't seen them play anybody. Michigan cannot move the ball effectively, so I'm not buying them offensively. And they got a tough schedule moving forward, too. They haven't played Penn State, still got to play Ohio State. That Penn State game's this weekend. And then Miami, there's an unknown factor there. Like, that was a lot of fun to watch them beat Georgia Tech, and that was a great game. Probably should have lost. I mean, that was a pretty fortunate fourth down bounce that they got to win that game at home. So I'm still going to roll with USC. But Let me even ask this. I know we're up against it, but do you think you can identify the four best teams in college football right now?
I do. Yeah, I do.
Do you agree with the top four?
Of the AP rankings?
Of the AP rankings.
Probably.
Okay. Well, who are the four best teams in college football? Do you think you can identify it right now?
No, actually, I don't. I don't agree with the
rankings. You
don't
agree with the rankings?
I think I can identify it.
Okay. Well, we'll see if we agree. We'll throw out maybe our four best teams. Do that to kick out the final hour. Crunch Time brought to you by Crunch Fitness. Always $9.95 a month, so why would you ever pay more for a gym membership? You can find out more about where Sprague and I work out at crunch.com. We'll start the final hour there. Some more college football conversation. We'll get into Bill Moose leaving Washington State for Nebraska. What does that mean for the Cougars? Is Mike Leach going to follow? Are Washington and Washington State done in the college football playoff picture? We got to get to the MLB postseason. The Astros and the Dodgers are both up 2-0. Can they hold on and win their series? And then talk a little Monday Night Football to close the show out. Lots to get to in the final hour. Don't go anywhere. Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.